Good morning. How are you this morning? I'm always happy to see a group Friday morning. You never know. And I've done this a couple of times. And I want to welcome all the folks watching over the web. Hope it's sunny and warm where you are. Certainly very nice here in Denver. I'm going to talk a little bit this morning about a project that had its genesis about 5 years ago to deal with online learners in a way that we really hadn't done before. And I'm going to do it in kind of the following way. I'm going to tell you a little about what led to the project, what did we find out, what did we do, what were the results, and then I'm going to take you on a little tour of some of the things that you may not have seen before, but you've heard about. And I know when I come to EDUCAUSE, that's one of the things that I like to do is see things in one place that I haven't experienced. For those of you that may have to leave to run to catch a plane, or for those of you that want to think about this and show it to your colleagues, I'll give you an address at the end where you can get the entire presentation, including the demos at the end. And I did it in a way that you can easily see them. They're screenshots. You don't have to log in, get test accounts. It'll give you an easy way to look at those and to share those. And I'll also upload it to the conference website probably over the weekend. A little bit about the college and a little bit about me. I'm the CIO, the chief technology person at Northern Virginia Community College. I take care of all the stuff, and it only works because of the technical staff that works for me. But I also am in charge of all of our distance learning. In fact, I started as an instructional designer in our distance learning unit and worked my way up. I was director for many years, and we actually were running computers and computer networks and servers back before Windows. And so when PCs came along, they looked around and said, who knows anything about these boxes? Probably not going to last anyway. And so we made a conscious decision that under the academic side of the house, all of our technology would be managed. And over time, and you see it here at EDUCAUSE more and more, it's not that we took somebody out of the technology side to manage our resources, but out of the academic side. And because we knew something about it, we like to think that we've built quite a good network. The distance learning program is just one of the aspects of Northern Virginia Community College. We're the community college serving the Washington, D.C. suburbs in Northern Virginia. For those of you that aren't familiar with that area, it ranges from farmland and historical battlefields and Mount Vernon to inner core urban areas in Alexandria and Arlington. It has Tyson's Corner, which is the home of USA Today that many of you got at your hotel this morning. In fact, Tyson's Corner, one of many neighborhoods that we actually have, has as much office space as downtown Chicago. We also serve the Marines at Quantico. We have a very diverse area. When we mess up, and like probably happened the other day, and I was here, when it snows and somebody doesn't get the text that we're closed, or when we have a power outage and they didn't get the text that they didn't need to come to work or come to class, here's where I get emails from or phone calls. I get it from the Pentagon, from Homeland Security. I get it from AOL. I get it from the White House, not the West Wing, not the guys in the basement, because that's where our students work, and that's where their spouses work, and that's where their parents work. And so it's a very high-charged environment. We began distance learning in that environment in 1975. In fact, we were one of the original community college providers of national content. We were the original, in Virginia, the original college of any kind to do video conferencing. In fact, we had single-digit serial number equipment. So we've been on the cutting edge of doing this kind of stuff for a long time. Our distance learning program now has over 450 courses, 19 degrees, well over 400 faculty. It's a very huge operation. It's very centralized. All of our distance learning is offered through the Extended Learning Institute at Northern Virginia Community College. We don't do it as many colleges do, where the academic side is offered through the departments. We work with our faculty from the six campuses or the three centers that we have, but we do the coordination and the delivery through the Extended Learning Institute. It's also something I guess I should point out in the beginning. This is not about MOOCs. Now, I know if you've been to a lot of the sessions, everything today is about MOOCs, but this is about a credit program. MOOCs are just one of the instructional tools that we will use to help our students get to a degree faster and cheaper. But this is about all the other things that we discovered we needed to do to actually compete in the online market. And I'm going to lead you through the process that we went through. The way this program started was we were watching our enrollments mirror our campus enrollments. Now, that's a good thing, maybe. So we were growing at about 14% and saw it fall and fall. Not the enrollments, but the rate of growth, until we were growing only about 7% a year. And all of you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, given that online enrollments are supposed to really be skyrocketing. And what we were seeing is our share of the adult population. Now, remember, we're a community college. Our share of the adult population wasn't changing very much. In fact, we weren't attracting new adults. We were attracting a lot of adults, but not new adults. And it came to every discussion, why are they paying so much to go to the University of Phoenix, or to the University of Maryland University College, or Strayer University, or American Public University, or American Military University? What is it that people in our area are doing, going to these very expensive, though American Public University's probably the, more like our pricing, but why are they choosing those institutions over us? What is it we need to do to compete in that online space? Now, in some cases, they have benefits for military service, and so cost isn't an issue. For others, their employer is paying. But it still was something that troubled us. And so what I'm going to lead you through is the process, the research that we did, and then what impact it had. All right. The online market is crowded. Public colleges, this is going back, this data is up from when we started about 4 or 5 years ago. Public colleges had only about 58% of the online students. The non-public colleges were also expected to grow at 5% faster rates than the public colleges before MOOCs. By 2015, the research that we were seeing nationally was that 80% of the adult market, adults are 25 to 45 year olds, that they would be 50% of the enrollments of that sphere of students would be online. Now, here was in fall 2009, to give you an idea when we're talking about growth and why this is a really hot market, look at the numbers. University of Phoenix, at that time, was growing at 22%. Education Management runs a bunch of different colleges, 22%, DeVry, 37, APU and AMU, 42. And you can see, big numbers, we were at 7. Now, the reason, and we went out and EduVentures, which is a big research firm, did a lot of research nationally. They did some special research for us. But what they found was that the private colleges were spending 53% on student services. Public community colleges, by contrast, were spending 31%. That's a huge difference. And they were doing it partly to recruit those students, but to help them achieve better results. And when we talk about those student services, here's what we're talking about. Financial aid counselors, tutoring services, graduation teams to help make sure students got to graduation. Academic, personal, and financial aid support for those students, one-stop advising, job placement and career services, email and phone calls about attendance and performance to students, so you get an early alert, what do you do with it? All of those things are in that 20% gap. Now, we went out into Northern Virginia, and we said, what is it the adults are looking for? And here's what the research said, that if a course or a program was online, they wanted to be 100% online. Now, at Northern Virginia Community College, and I suspect at many other colleges, you have a mix of students. Some are only taking online. Some are taking both online and credit courses and on-campus courses at the same time. They don't care what the instructional method is. Beats going to class in the evening. In other terms, they'll be online one term, on-campus another term. But if it's online, they want it all online. They don't want to have to go to campus for anything. They want flexibility and convenience, monthly class starts. Now, we were doing continuous enrollment beginning in 1975. And in fact, I remember in the early years doing presentations and everybody's eyes got big and said, how in the world do you ever do that? Now it's the norm in online education. Affordability, and yet they're still picking very high-priced proprietary institutions. Flexible weekly schedule. They don't want set login times. They don't want a virtual classroom where they have to be on the computer at a particular time. They don't mind assignments. It's not about due dates. It's about flexibility for their schedules. They wanted 8-week courses. Now, that's a big shift. And I will just tell you from personal experience watching my daughter go through a course and my son-in-law go through courses, and here's what happens in an 8-week course. About the time they figure out that they hate it, They're almost over and they may as well finish. No joke. And I would watch them calculate how much time they would have to spend studying and getting assignments in each week, because they knew if they got behind, it was only 8 weeks long. Those are totally different dynamics than in a 16-week or 15-week or 14-week class, which by the time you figure out you hate it about the fifth week, my God, I've still got 10 weeks left. I'll drop it. I've lost the money anyway. We were really worried. We thought our students wouldn't be able to do 8-week courses. Our success rates are as good or better than our 16-week courses. They want easy access to services and support via the internet. And they want professors with real-world experience. Now, for us at Northern Virginia Community College, there were some challenges when we saw that research. First of all, the research also told us that adults want a bachelor's degree. They can enroll directly in an online college to get it. Only 22% wanted an associate degree, 47% wanted a bachelor's degree. So right off the bat, we knew we had to go out and make partnerships so we could say to a student, we have a pathway, not articulation, we have a path that takes you from the community college to a degree. You don't lose anything, you don't waste time, it's a pathway. Only 38% of adults are likely or open to enrolling in a community college. Two-thirds were willing to go somewhere else, even if the cost was higher. Only 48% of the adults were likely or open to an online course. What they wanted were hybrids. They wanted those blended courses where they meet periodically, but not every, like we do, the amount of seat time that we do in a traditional class. Our online originally focused on instruction with minimal staff for student services. And that's really important. And when you hear the MOOCs, they'll tell you the same thing. That's about the instructional side, and we were really good at that. We assumed our students would get their support services on campus, and that our support services would recognize the needs of the online learner and serve them. And that just didn't happen. Northern Virginia Community College has 6 campuses, 3 centers, 70,000 students, and turning it is worse than turning a battleship. And so trying to make the changes necessary in our student services to really meet the needs of those online learners. Remember I said they want it all online. They don't want, well, for that you have to come to campus. And so we had to rethink, what, how are we going to deliver all those services? We had call centers and we helped students, but it wasn't an orchestrated campaign to deliver those services that were the big gap between the proprietary, not-for-profit schools and the community college. Too few of our staff, we just had too few staff to do it. We couldn't absorb the kinds of changes that we needed. Our online staff, which was focused on the academic programs, was half the staff at the smallest campus in Northern Virginia. And affordability alone will not attract students. We heard that from students over and over again, and we saw it in the data. So we created what we called the Next Level Initiative, taking the Extended Learning Institute online learning at Northern Virginia Community College to the next level. And here's where we invested about $2 million to do this. We added 18 staff over 2 years. Now, I'm going to tell you some of the lessons learned as we go along. Adding staff is hard work. First, it's hard to find that many people that have the skills, are willing to move to Northern Virginia. It's a high-priced area. But just the interviews alone eat you alive time-wise. And by the time we were fully staffed, the first of the people were leaving, and we had to start all over again. It turned out to be one of our biggest problems was actually adding staff that we had slots for. We added 8 new programs, getting students to degrees that adults wanted in our research. We had plans to implement a customer resource management system, something like Hobson's or Talismo, or you know, you probably saw them on the convention floor. Problem is, the purchasing process for that kind of ERP system is very complicated and time-consuming in Virginia. It's not that we didn't know what we wanted, but we had no experience with it. And the problem when you don't have any experience is it's hard to write a good RFP. And we saw a lot of demos, and we still had trouble finding the right language and figuring out how to navigate the shoals of the purchasing process. I had a boss many years ago when I was at Michigan State who had a very good explanation for this. He said, build your second boat first. Because you don't know in that first one everything you need to know. Now, several years later, I wish we'd bought something and moved on. But we're still going to do that. We've put the money aside, and we're going to do that. We needed to implement a strategy to expand support for after hours and weekends. Our help desk used to be there on Saturdays, and we would be there till 9 o'clock at night and start early in the morning, and they could email us or send chat or all the things help desks do. But we had to go 24/7, and so we had to partner with a firm to help us cover those after hours and weekends. And that's totally new for us, in part because we had to document and change our business practices and then communicate to our students, and we had to put money aside to pay for that. And it's been very, very heavily used. We handle after hours, meaning after 7 o'clock in the evening and on weekends, 15,000 tickets last year alone. We also had to do a different kind of marketing to reach the adult. The traditional marketing is aimed at the 18 to 21-year-old. It's about, come to us, you can transfer to a university 4 hours away. That's not what adults want. And so we've done a lot of web advertising, a lot of innovative kinds of advertising to reach those adults and to reach people that know who those adults are, that word of mouth will carry, hey, have you thought about going to Northern Virginia Community College? And we had to convert our programs to an 8-week accelerated format. And that was a massive effort. Not piecemeal a few a year. We simply did it over the course of a year. Now, here's the kind of positions we were talking about adding. 18 positions. What were they? A coordinator of academic advising and retention. We never had that. A quality assurance coordinator. Advanced placement specialist. 5 student success coaches. Someone that could take that early alert information or students that were having problems, had a person on our staff, not just a faculty member, not a counselor, but a person who was there to help them navigate higher education, because for many of them, it's the first person in their family to go to college. Registration specialist to handle growth, financial aid specialist, testing and tutoring, orientation, hotline, a daytime call person that could take calls from students separate from the help desk, multimedia production, library specialist, and I'll come back to that in a minute, course design assistant. Again, just helping produce the materials, keep up with the workflow as we grew into more students. And a technology specialist to help students use the technology. And an administrative assistant. Recruiting for all of those, again, a nightmare. Now, here's why we did it. This wasn't just it's the right thing to do, and it wasn't quite focused the way the MOOCs are on the research, the benefits of doing it. Here's kind of the estimated return on investment that made this so important to our institution. For an estimated recurring cost of $1,618,642, most of it to pay for those 18 positions, and that's after the cost of instruction. Remember, this is the non-LMS stuff. This is the non-teaching stuff. Our estimates were that it would generate 1,000 new full-time equivalent students. That's 30 credit hours a year. From the tuition and state revenue, and then we have a technology fee. So we estimated the net return after all of our expenses, that $1.6 million, the cost of instruction, all that out of the way, it would increase the college's free money, if you will, to spend on other things by over $600,000 a year. Here's the value proposition. Here's kind of the results and what we did. We improved success in our online program overall from 61 to 65%. And we did that, and we knew we needed to do that because they would be 50% more likely to re-enroll. What did we achieve? We're now, depending on the term, between 65 and 67% of our success. And I'm going to tell you how that compares to on-campus in just a minute. We said we would increase enrollment in a second online class from 38% to 60%. Because repeat customers are an easy way to grow your enrollments. Our results, we're now seeing 66%. It had been 38, we're now at 66%. And I know, I can hear and I can see in your eyes, I'm not claiming cause and effect, but we were on the right track of what we knew we had to do. We would increase the graduates, people getting associate degrees, enrollment in at least one online class, that we would help them get to their degree quicker, faster, and cheaper for the institution. We were at 41%, we wanted to go to 60%. This spring, or last year's graduates, it was 61%. We would increase the graduates' enrollment in 4 or more online classes. In other words, getting the graduates to take at least one online class, one a semester during their 2 years, though that's an artificial time. But we hope to go from 13% that we're taking a bunch of ELI classes or online classes to 25%. We got it up to 22%. We would increase the number of graduates with more than 10 online credits, or 10 online courses, I'm sorry, it's not credits, from 45 to 150. Now, think about that. The number of students in our of our graduates that would take half their program in online courses, we wanted to grow it. It had been about 45. We actually have 536 students that had 10 or more online courses in last year's graduating class. And we increased the online only, I mean students only taking online in a particular term, from 50 to 60%. And here's the interesting thing, that fell. It fell below where we'd been, because now students are just taking as part of the regular schedule. So we've added a lot of online students, but we haven't increased the number that are just doing it online as a percentage of our total. And we would increase the percentage of online adult students, 25 to 45 year olds, from 50 to 65% of the total number of online students. And we're right now at about 55%. Again, so many more of our younger students are taking online classes that the percentages didn't make it where we were going. But I'm going to talk about the real numbers in just a minute, and we'll dig into it a little bit more. But all of that was going to generate for us 1,000 new full-time equivalent students a year. Here's what we actually have done. We increased it by almost a little over 1,400 additional full-time equivalent students. Now, we did it through a combination of a lot of things. Part of it, the online world just expanded and students' expectations changed. But we were there to meet them and meet what they were looking for because we did that. And the revenue it generated for the college budget was over $2.5 million. That's net revenue after paying for all of this. Now, here's what we found in our online adult students. Again, 25 to 45 year olds, between 2008, 2009, and 2011-12, last year, we increased our number of adult students by 3,658, compared to only 2,261 in the on-campus programs. Online learning is less than 15% of the entire college, and look at the difference in where the adults chose to go. So we were absolutely right in the market we wanted to go after, and we got them. We just didn't see it grow as a percentage of the total. Improving student success. Remember I talked a minute ago about we wanted to get up to in the low 60s, and we got to 65%. Here's the gap between success on campus and success in online courses. That in fall 2008, there was a big gap, 16%, for a variety of reasons. Spring 2012, it was down to 9%. And that's the gap between success on campus and success in an online class. That's a huge difference and a huge improvement. And we know things that we'll be doing that will drive it even closer to make it more like success on campus. Same with the withdrawal rate from classes. Remember I talked about going to 8 weeks helps with that? And it's interesting that the success gap, and success is an A, B, or C in the course, went from 16% and it's now down to 8.2%. The gap, not the withdrawal rate, but the gap between the rate on campus and the rate in online. Here's our projected online growth from our institutional research folks. You'll see it had been a little bit of a slope, a little bit of growth. Look at the slope of the line and how much it's expected to grow over the next 4 years. Now, why? What's the benefit to the campuses? Why would they be willing to let the college invest so much money in online learning when we're only 15% of the total and nobody has enough money? Well, because by doing this and generating that excess revenue and not needing classrooms or physical facilities or more night classes or weekend classes or 7 a.m. classes, it increased operating funds to distribute to everyone, including the campuses. It gave them credit toward their enrollment targets because they were providing faculty to us and they were working with us. It increased the adjunct faculty budgets because when we use one of their faculty, we repay them and say, I know you have a need for faculty, go ahead, here's the money to hire an adjunct. And when we distribute new faculty positions, it's based on enrollment. And if they had a ton of online enrollments from their faculty, they, in the models that we use to generate new positions, they did very well. We're not done. This is a pause for those of you that may have to run and catch a plane. Here's where you can get a copy of the presentation, probably not till maybe Monday afternoon, where you can find more information on online learning at Northern Virginia Community College, and if you want to contact me. And I've got more, but I just, for those who need to run, I wanted to tell you how to get this. So I'll pause for just a minute. And for those of you that are tweeting in questions, let me take a look and see what they have. It said, why did the added staff have to move to your location? Couldn't they work from anywhere? Yes, they didn't all have to move, but we didn't see a lot of people applying. It's still a new concept. So they didn't have to move, just the way the advertising, the way people applied for those positions. And a second one says, in an eight-week course, by the time they figure out they hate it, it's almost done. Well, that's just restating what I had pointed out. All right. Now, I'm going to take you on a quick tour of our virtual services. These are the kinds of things we added in case you've never seen them and wonder how do they work. And when you go home and tell somebody, like a provost or a dean or a faculty member, and they kind of say, eh, I don't think so. And I'm going to talk about ProctorU for video test proctoring. We do proctoring of at least two exams, activities, something to guarantee that the student getting the grade is the student that did the work. We've always done it. We probably always will. I can tell you firsthand the amount of cheating that went on and that we've caught them is amazing. There is now a company advertising that they will take courses or take exams for students. Company, not, and Craigslist is full of opportunities. And it's not all about cheating and online. My favorite was the person who said, gave their physical description, I need someone to take my math exam Saturday morning for an on-campus class. I'm going to talk about, show you smart thinking for online tutoring, what our embedded librarian, we have a librarian embedded in a lot of our online classes, and I'm going to show you our virtual student union that we do with WordPress. ProctorU, if you haven't seen it. And there are other companies that do this. ProctorU is a live proctoring by video, and I'll show you what it looks like. There's a company that I know that does it by recording, and then they review the recordings there. But it's out there. It's growing. We have somewhere between 400 and 800 tests proctored this way every month by our students. In ProctorU, basically, a student can go to the website. They tell what term. They tell about the exam. They pick a time when they want to do it because they have to schedule a live body. They pick a time. They get a reservation. And again, you can look at these at your leisure when you download or go online and look at the presentation. But this is what comes back to the student. And so first step, we've got to authenticate them. And so they do it with a little webcam, either their laptop and they show it around or a little webcam and they show it around. And so they have to do user authentication. They have to show a picture ID on the webcam so that we can verify who are they. They have to show the room. They show their desk. They show the room. The company controls the computer and the software so students can't cheat. Again, showing the room. And then they go to the test site, and they're monitored while they're taking the test because we got the webcam showing what's the student doing. As administrators, we get a list. We know who's using this. What are they doing? When are they doing it? And so for video proctoring, let me tell you where it saved our keister. We have had, as many of you had, days when we had to close due to weather or sudden emergencies, things that have happened to shut us down. And we were able, in fact, to switch students, in other words, send them, if they were at a deadline, to video proctoring. We're able to proctor exams over the holidays. We're closed. We didn't have to have staff work, and we didn't have to delay students finishing up over the holidays because they could do the video proctoring. It saved us a lot of work for those students who then might have had to arrange for a proctor and we'd have to mail them a test or mail them a password. This takes it all out of our hands, makes life much easier. But we split the cost with the student, by the way. We pay $10, they pay $8. Video tutoring through smart thinking. Again, if you haven't seen it, and I know this, I'm not going to give you time to read all of it, but this is what a tutoring session looks like. And yeah, it's chat, but it also could be, see, where they do lines, where they're doing diagramming. The tutors know how to do this. The tutors know how to use the technology. It's not about, well, I'm not very good at this, or I can do just chat with you. They can even do math, and they do a lot of it. Now, here's the trick that we learned. When faculty would send students, or was in the syllabus for the course, that they could do video tutoring, or video online tutoring, not so much. When we would send it out from the Extended Learning Institute, either the director or success coach or the staff, reminding students, we would see the amount of tutoring going way up. We were building a bond with our students and advising them separate from their class. And we do it periodically. We remind all of our students, our success coaches are watching students and taking input from faculty. Who should use this? And we pay for that. Students get it for free. And they even have a whiteboard. It's not all just line-by-line chat. They actually have a whiteboard where they can draw. They can do a lot of things. All right, the embedded librarian. Now, an embedded librarian, because we use Blackboard, just becomes another instructor. And I'll just, again, show you some of the things right in the menu. There's a welcome, a way to connect with a librarian when they're embedded in the class. They have forums set up to help students write papers. They have topics that they know in that class that are going to be relevant to the students. So right in Blackboard, just like the instructor's course material, they've got all those support services from the librarian for helping students do assignments, do research, do papers. And by the way, if they need Writing Center help, they can go to Smart Thinking and get it. And there are just some samples that you can read at your leisure about what some of those sites, what some of those forums look like. Similarly, in this particular case, you can see they're talking about processes. And the discussion board, they have a discussion board set up for talking back and forth to the librarian. Not just the instructor, not just the regular assignments, but within a class, giving it a really robust feel that it's not just a book and a test, it's not just asynchronous about the course, it's about the support services. We also have a virtual student union. In the virtual student union, and this is done with WordPress, and there were a lot of interesting products that we may want to switch to that give us some added functionality, but students want to be engaged. They want to feel they're more than just a course. And we were surprised because, frankly, for many, many years, we thought it was about the course. It is, but these are the kinds of things that a virtual student lounge would do. Research years ago, and I know we all do CESI in the community college world and the comparable products in the four-year world, but one of the things that we knew that students would persist if quitting meant they lost a certain affinity, a certain belonging. Now, how many of you lived in a dorm when you were in college? Okay. One of the things that we discovered, and when I was at Michigan State, I lived it, and then when I was on staff there, we did a little research too. Students will help other students in a dorm, and certainly in fraternities and sororities, that's one of the pitches they make, to succeed. Who's the best instructor? How do you do this? What do you, how do you get around that? What recourse do you have? What's an easy course? All that stuff. Do you know why they do that? Because if the student fails, they have to go home. They lose an affinity. They lose the belonging. So we said we want to give students a reason to be part of this, to take more online courses, and to identify with us. And that's what the Virtual Student Union does. Here they've got interest groups and music lounge and discussion den and game center. We do a common reader, just like you would see in a first-year experience at an on-campus program. Here you can see the quad, which in Virginia means a lot. Again, different buttons below to go to a new corner of the quad, new interest areas, talking, affinity. Connecting, again, you can see different ways you get connected into the student union. A game center. A music lounge. Do we have to do this? No. But it's a value-added part of that support service that helps students feel connected and not just a course, isolated, alone. A discussion den where people can just, they needed a place to go and talk. And I know everybody's got Facebook, and I know everybody's got Twitter, and I know all of that. This is part of something identified with where they're working on their academic program. Again, interest groups. We have a bulletin board and a newsletter for students. And this is just an example of, we have one of the posts, just to see, they had a new post. Well, the first day of the challenge did not go well for me. We were road tripping back from Tennessee, 10 hours in the car means I didn't get to walk nearly as much as I wanted to. I tried to get out at a rest stop, but it just wasn't the same. They have a walking program where students challenge each other, kind of online Weight Watchers or online exercise group. So all those people said, well, that wouldn't have any relevance in an online program. Yes, it does. And we have lots and lots of students that do this and participate because that's what they're looking for. And they're choosing online, not because they wouldn't go to a residential college or go to campus maybe if they could. For many of them, this is college for them. And we're making it as robust as we can. So once again, here's a copy of the, where you can get a copy of the complete presentation, more information on our online learning program, and how you can contact me. Look and see if there are any no new tweets. There's another one. In the revenue calculations, did I include new tool costs like ProctorU, SmartThinking? Yes, we did. We did include those costs. And those are things we'd added. We've been doing little bits of. We just weren't promoting them and growing them. But yes, we did include all those costs. So questions from the group. We've got a little bit of time left. Yes, please walk to the microphone so that the folks at home can hear you.
This is Roy Bowery from the University of Memphis, and I had a question about online orientation. Do you do asynchronous, synchronous?
We have both. We have both asynchronous and synchronous orientations for students, and the same for technology training. So we use Blackboard Collaborate for an online synchronous experience for students, but we also have tutorials and all kinds of resources that are asynchronous for doing that. We used to do an actual in-person, but we ran out of space. We probably will do that again as well, as having, for folks that want to come and really need that, I need to get started with a real person, we'll probably do that as well. Yes?
Have you done any research to try to draw a causal relationship between some of the eLife community stuff and students' likelihood to remain with the institution?
Not yet. We have not done research on how likely participation in the student union and some of that is on retention. It's on the agenda, but given our staffing, it's not very high on the agenda right now.
Hi, I'm a faculty member, and I was involved in a project this last semester where we identified students that were in danger of failing and sent out intervention messages. I'm getting nowhere with that, so your comment about the smart thinking, that if your success center, your counselors sent the emails out, you got a good positive response.
Yes.
But if the faculty sent the email, there was no response, and that's pretty much my situation. Do y'all have any insights into that? Or?
Yeah, we're not, I can't say it with 100% certainty, but every case we've seen over quite a few years are exactly yours. Either the faculty member didn't send students to online tutoring, or the students didn't respond, even when it was free. Whereas when the success coaches build that bond with those students to say, I'll help you through, but the first thing you need to do, and that was one of the big things that we discovered was, it takes a village. It's not just about the faculty member. We think it's in part because they're worried that in some way the faculty member will get, it'll break that bond, or it'll give the faculty member a lower opinion of them, or they're cheating or something. But when they do it from the success coaches, very, very positive responses.
So in my case, because my case is I have a face-to-face class, so I should send my list to like an academic counseling center, maybe have them send the notices?
You could try that. That'd be one way of trying it. But they, first, they have to have a bond. So if it's a stranger out of the blue, might not have any meaning. So our success coaches call students. They email students personally. They build a bond, but they're not the faculty member. They don't give grades. They're just there to help the student. Different relationship than the faculty member. Yes?
Yeah, as I'm listening, it sounds like there's a lot of really interesting ideas around, that are outside of the actual course itself to support the students. But I'm wondering, were there also some strategies that you used that were like more like within the course, you know, the course design or with the professor in terms of how to help that professor or instructor be more engaging with, you know, themselves?
Yeah, we the question had to do, for those at home if you couldn't hear it, was were there also elements built into the courses to engage the learners? And absolutely. We have a big instructional design staff. We want them to be active learners. It is not a book and a test. It's about a richness of the experience, whether it's the activities that the students are doing, or the feedback that they get, or the peer cohort activities that are going on. They work very hard to build engagement in those courses to make them much more robust. And if you listen to the presentations from edX and Coursera and the other MOOC providers, that's one of the big things that they're doing as well. It's not just a book and a test or online and a test. It's about the engagement within the class where a student's doing something, getting feedback, and interacting with other people as well.
Mike Scalera, Institute of Technology. I just had a question about how you procured the pathway for those 18 positions, because they seemed really specific. So how did you plan to know that you needed an actual group of 18 of those positions to, you know, do your entire program? And how many of those positions were taken care of by students?
Question was, how did the first part was, how did we know those were the right 18 and how many we needed of each? And what was the second part?
How many of those positions were augmented by student support? Or were they all full-time staff members and they were all, none of them were students?
I'm not sure.
Were they student workers?
Oh, no, no student workers. No, I get it. The reason we don't have a lot of student workers, in part, we can't pay enough. In Northern Virginia, the regulations, they can get much more money working elsewhere than working for us. But in terms of how did we know those were the 18, the staff sat down and talked about what are the functions. I mean, we visited and talked to a number of other institutions. What did you do? What were the results? What did it take to do it? And then it was the Ouija board and how many could we get and what could we pay. And there was no magic other than we know those were the areas and we just did some back of the envelope figuring is what would we need. Yes.
Carl Gibbons, University of Denver. What feedback have you received from employers of students that have gone through these online courses and this online program?
That's a very good question. What feedback do we have from employers? And the answer is, I don't know. I don't think we have any. Because we're part of the college does those kinds of employer surveys, but it's amassed for the whole college. Very positive for the college, but they don't segment it by program. They would, I think, in part because they worry it would then the next thing would be campus by campus and the competition would just be terrible. Yes?
Yeah, hi. I just had a question about the online proctoring program. Were there discussions about going the authentic assessment route as opposed to going through all that stuff with the proctoring, or was it?
Give me an example that you think would be authentic proctoring that would work.
Well, it's more for the individual course, right? So if a course, instead of giving the written test, they gave an authentic assessment where the product they were looking for was the assessment.
And we do some of those, but it's in a proctored environment. And here, the reason I ask that, and I have colleagues in Virginia that have for years said, I know my students. That you don't need to have proctored. I know who's doing the work. And I will tell you, because, and I can't give you too much detail, but we caught a mother doing the courses for her daughters. So what we knew was the work from the start to the end was consistent. And when they went in for the proctored exam, it was the mother. Now, all authentic assessment in that particular model would have told us is the same person that took the exam did all the work, whether it was a student or not, without seeing that ID or something that we could actually use as ID, we wouldn't have known. And I am not, this is not a joke. There is a company that advertises, we will do your courses for you, on campus or online. Yes, ma'am.
I have three questions from our online audience.
Okay.
First is from Casper College. Who did you partner with to be able to offer 24-hour service, customer service, and support?
We currently are using Perceptus, which was doing the 24-hour help desk for UVA. And also doing work with Old Dominion University.
The second one is from Roger Rain. You said the hotline staff member was separate from the help desk. How did students know which number to call?
Well, we have, if it was course and Eli and online course related, they'd call the distance learning hotline. If it was technical related or on a weekend or after hours, they could call the help desk. Students were able to figure it out very easily. The help desk is more an IT typical help desk for technology. I can't connect. I lost my password. The dog ate my cord. What do I do? Whereas if it was more course or academic specific or deadlines or online course specific, they knew they could get somebody with a direct call to the Eli hotline.
Okay, my final question is also from Casper College. They're on your website, and they want to know where they're going to be able to find your presentation.
It's not posted on the website yet. You got to wait till Monday. Because there are always changes that happen this week, and so as soon as I go home, I'll put it up on the website. So, well, listen, thank you all very much. I hope you have a great trip home, and hope to talk to more of you later.